Broadcast Network, AfterBuzz TV, over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries, and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Oh, yeah. Love that music. So 60s. By the way, McGowan, for the original song of this, they had very, it was very subdued, and he was like, no, we need trumpets and horns and thunder and all this and that. And
really?
And
it's a party.
Yeah. So.
It was a party.
One day we'll compare the original parties to this. We have Steph Z here on the panel.
Hi, guys. Are we telling our Twitters or no?
I am Steph Z.
I am Steph Z with an F.
With an
Steph.
F.
Z with a Z, right?
Like zebra.
Like zebra. That's
yes.
Good. As opposed to xylophone.
Yeah, xylophone.
Exactly. I like where your head's at.
Yeah.
And we have Meredith Placco.
Hi, everyone. I'm at M Placco. That's with a P-L-A-C-K-O.
And, of course, I am your host, Phil Svitek. Always blessed to be joined by these lovely ladies. And if you haven't already done so, please do so. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/AfterBuzzTV. Go over to, if you like us on iTunes, we're there. If you like us on SoundCloud, we're there. And heck, we're on every sort of platform you can imagine. That's free 99!
Oh, heck!
So, no excuse not to listen, no excuse not to share. And of course, today we're talking about A, B, and C, or a play of three acts, or one, two, and three, as it was all supposed to kind of be called.
Many names for one episode.
That's right.
Yeah.
What'd you think overall? Let's start there, and then we'll kind of do some, we'll give an overview, and then we'll get into the episode.
I really liked this episode. For some reason, I don't know why, I felt like this episode was too soon for me in my watching. I don't know if this was originally the third one in line.
It was filmed as the 10th. So I will give
that's
a good kind of interpretation. I will, I can speak to that a little bit, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked it. I felt something was just like, some other stuff maybe could have, should have, would have happened. I wasn't displeased with the episode, but I kind of felt that.
Okay.
So we'll
That's
see.
That's fair. I loved it. It actually reminded me of a lot of Danger Man episodes. It was just great to see number six kicking butt and taking names, as you will. It felt like a spy show, which, I mean, he's a spy, but it was really great to see him kind of go back into his natural element and explore some things, and that was really nice. And I just kind of like the overall theme and feel of it. There, it definitely felt too soon in terms of watching order, but it had a nice. To me, it also felt like, oh, it found its stride in terms of what are we doing with the show. So I really liked it.
I liked it because, you know, last the chimes of Big Ben, we got, you know, we kind of entered into London. Now we're in Paris. And so while we're in the village, we're not necessarily in the village. You know, we're still in prison there.
We're in
but
the
we
global
kind of,
village.
Yeah, yeah. We've been going outside of it. So I liked it. So a couple of quick things. Yes, it was filmed as the 10th episode. So, and again, the order's kind of still debatable. Last time we talked
I have a question. I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt you. But maybe I should know the answer. Or no, I don't think I should. But why is there... Sorry, that's what happens inside. Why is there so much debate? Like, a lot of
debate
series...
Debate over what?
Over the sequence in... Or the, you know, the order in episodes. Like, a lot of shows, you don't have this complaint, concern, question afterwards. Like, why'd they release them in that order?
Not
like,
all how shows film consecutively either. So, what...
Right.
Well, to be fair, there is certain debate over shows. I forget which one it was, but it was a Fox show. And, to help out some things, you know, they put episode 5 as number 2 and then reshuffled the rest
of them.
Wasn't
that Firefly?
No, this was a recent kind of TV series. Not Gotham, but I guess Gotham's another example of that. I'm thinking of something else.
Well, I think also, too, there was... how it aired originally and how people view the airings. Isn't that also part of it? Like,
yeah.
We're not, are we watching it in the original airing?
But the original airing is what we're going
okay,
by.
Because
the, oh, we
yeah.
are.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So
online, fans of the show have decided that there's a their own like way of watching it that they feel yeah. makes a more cohesive viewing.
Yeah.
It would be interesting for us to just make this not 17 but 34 and then just go watch it the fan way and redo every single show.
There we go. But we'll go backwards the next
time. Yeah, totally.
Part of it is, you know, some of the ordering had to be restructured out of, you know, they might have thought it was supposed to go one way, but as we talked about, Leo McKern, he was number two twice. Well, actually three times for him. Colin Gordon, who's this week's number two, is the only other number two to play it multiple times, and he played it in The General, which was filmed as episode 11. And there it kind of, you know, right, one of the things I want to talk about the opening, he doesn't say, I am the new number two, which you would expect yeah. him to say.
Right.
And so I think that's part of the confusion into, wait, is this somebody we know? Because he's not new, but he's new to
right.
us.
Yeah.
Right.
So, and in the general,
I think that it's interesting that so many fans got together and agreed on this. That is something we talk about. Because even shows mm-hmm. like you mentioned that maybe episode 5 became episode 2, and then they scrapped some episodes and went from there. But like, it's known like that's what they did, and like all the fans follow that along. This yeah. is something yeah. where the fans are actually like, maybe you guys should have done that different, and like everyone kind of like listened.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of cool.
Absolutely. A lot of this was actually filmed at MGM because of the locations, and it was filmed on the set of Casino Royale. So that whole James Bond thing is just ever present.
Yeah, really, they like, can't escape it.
I love that.
We'll certainly talk about Freudian theory, but it was around this time. It was very much alive and well, especially with the whole counterculture and everything. And this was kind of the next wave. Also, I'm Meredith's excited to talk about yeah. cyberpunk, but you had in the 1950s a couple of books, you know, by Philip K. Dick, and that was the first. Start of the movement,
yeah, they didn't, you didn't really get the term cyberpunk coined until the late 70s was the first time you saw it used, but it wasn't until, I think it was, well, 1975 is when you first figure out what the first cyberpunk novel is. It's in the 80s you really start to hear that term, but I'll get into that later. I'm really big into cyberpunk.
Here's, you know, we do have some pictures, though, of kind of cyberpunk, and I want to just, what seems to be a common thread is everyone's always sleeping. Right, so here's a picture of the Matrix.
I'm just really tired, okay, guys? It's a dystopian future. It's really exhausting.
The more you sleep in the real world, the more action you have in the virtual world. So there's a picture of Inception, which I definitely mm-hmm. want to tie into.
Wow, yeah.
And then
Then you have classic cyberpunk
Days
films.
Of Future yeah. Past, oh, the more yeah. recent one. But, yeah, what were some of the other ones you
well,
had?
Well, I mean, you have, God, not Demolition Man. I'm blanking on... It's one of the classic ones. Well, you know, Neuromancer. You think about like Neuromancer, and then the Shockwave Rider, which is technically the first cyberpunk book. You know, it's funny you mentioned the sleeping thing, but what I kind of noticed was there's one of the overall archetypes of cyberpunk. They're all tend to be anti-heroes. There's no mm-hmm. true like hero, but as Lawrence Person, a renowned sci-fi author, mentioned, he said that they are marginalized, alienated loners who lived on the edge of society in generally dystopic futures. When you apply that to The Prisoner, it's really interesting because number six, being a spy, is a loner. He's alienated. And even yeah. now in the village, he's even more alienated. And what the village is really kind of the idealized dystopian future that everything's so perfect and handed to you. But in the reality, it's people controlling you and wanting something out of you, like in The Matrix, where they were creating a perfect society for these humans so they could feed off of.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So yeah, well, you know, I'm excited to really dive mm-hmm. deeper into that. Kind of a background thing. I don't know when the first blue screen was ever used, but to create the images on screen in the lab, they use blue screen. To
me, versus green screen.
Well, but just the fact of that back then, they had the ability to do this technique. Mm-hmm. This is 1966. I found that insane. I want to do more research into blue screen, but because to me, you know, not that it was computer generated at all, or, you know, but to me, you had to do it old school. You had to like burn it in and all this stuff. And
yeah,
I don't know the full technique. I'm interested.
Yeah, you start to see the you know, back in especially earlier films, practical effects being used. And this is kind of like the 60s is really where you start to see special effects, computer generated special effects merged with practical effects. And, you know, we saw it in some television shows such as I Dream of Jeannie and Bewitched a little bit. And it's really great to look into that history of film movie making and see how this is really where it was born. Like, you know, the stuff that we see later, especially in Star Trek, came out of a lot of these shows done in the 60s.
And the nice part, you know, some of it, by today's standard, looks a little cheesy. This didn't look cheesy at all.
No, it didn't look cheesy.
So I give them a lot of credit there. This episode was directed by Pat Jackson, but he kind of fell into it. It was originally supposed to be directed by Michael Truman, but the story goes that he fell ill, and so Pat Jackson filled in. And ironically, this same exact plot would be used in an episode of Counter-Strike called Nocturne.
Nocturne. Wow.
I knew I'd messed that up.
You say Counter-Strike, and I think the video game.
That's
I was like, I don't remember that level.
This was a 1969 episode.
Oh, wow.
And it was written by a lot of George Markstein's kind of people and disciples, which obviously, you know, we'll continue. We keep hinting at it, and it's coming. There's a lot of reference to be made about in terms of his resignation because you know, we talked about it in episode one, the footage of him, that's George Markstein behind the desk. And so because it's episode 10 in the filming order, when right around that time that breakup of George and Patrick McGoohan was happening, that it's very symbolic of their kind of relationship and a whole FU to George.
Right.
So I don't think we can ignore that. And this is the only episode that it ever rains. So that's a spoiler alert right there. Sorry, in hindsight.
I'm going to tell you something and then afterwards tell you that it's a spoiler.
But here's the thing. It doesn't really affect.
I mean, No. I would have never, like,
noticed that.
It's just a piece of trivia.
Yeah.
It makes you think, though, if it's the only episode it rains, is the village even a real village or is it in a giant warehouse?
It makes me want to know why is this the only one that it rains. Like, what did the rain in this episode play? Like, was... I mean, you know, it's either one of you guys. Is there something that having the rain made more intense? Because
Frankenstein, right? Mm-hmm. So we kind of open up the episode, right? Literally, just kind of apart from the regular intro, which if you guys want to talk about, we can. But number two gets the phone call, and then he makes the phone call to number 14. Mm-hmm. Let's speed this up. And boom, lightning! Like again, we're gonna.
Right.
Here's an experiment like Frankenstein.
Well, and it was interesting because you know we have no background as to how number six ends up where he ends up. He just shows up and he's in this position and being put upon by these people. And it's just kind of like, that is kind of where I felt like, did I miss an episode? Did something happen beforehand? And then, you know, directly we get into this experiment. And when it all comes down, it's a human experiment.
Because, but they show us that after. I felt that way a little bit too, but then, and it was funny because when they said, you know, he needs to rest for 24 hours before we can do it again, and the maid was there, I was like, oh, there's poison in that mug. You know, and then it was just like, boom, done.
Yeah.
So they kind of like made up for that. But again, like, I don't know what it was. It was just something I was like, how'd they get here so quickly? Yeah. Like, why all of a sudden?
I also like that. It's kind of like a, here, let's just get like to the meat of the story, you know?
Yeah, but I felt like, too, I think the thing also was, for me, why it felt a little bit out of order was that number two, you know, starts out with the big red phone, which, you know, today is still, like, the red line, you know? But that, so it, to me, it read that he was doing something for a long period of time and wasn't being successful. And they had just, and that's, you know.
I disagree because what I liked about number two was, you know, he was very frustrated that this was what he was being judged on. He was like, I have more important things to do and I got to deal with this. Like, what is so important about this guy? But okay, clearly my job, you know,
depends on it.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so that's to me what was the fascinating part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was so dependent on number 14. Without her, you know, he could push her and things like that, but he had no abilities himself.
He was really out of his league with this. Yeah. Like, he just wanted to, which, I mean, and when you think about management, you know, how much does management really get the work done versus get other people to do the work for them? So, I mean, he's a really great middle manager.
Yeah.
You know, number
Delegator.
Two. Yeah, number two's really, he'd be hanging out with all the, maybe that's what it is all the number twos represent middle management.
It could be.
Oh, the delegators.
Yeah.
Like the vice presidents.
Exactly. But it's interesting. So just kind of backing up to the Frankenstein reference real quick. I obviously noticed that like right away. I mean, that was very symbolic of Frankenstein. But at the time too, you have to think about in the 60s, all the, you know, this is kind of the rise of the hippie movement, and you start to see a lot of that pushback to human and animal experiments. And it was really, you know, interesting to juxtapose the what's going on in here, thinking about what was actually going on at the time, especially in governments, where a lot of secret experiments were happening on people, especially certain people in the South in insane asylums or prisons.
Well, that I actually thought about that. Almost not exactly the same as you when we hear him on the phone to number 14 and her saying, like, we haven't tested it on humans yet. You know what I mean? So it has that element of if they really want to get something done, people are willing to step over that test period and they're just going to go. Like, even if it's unsafe, like, someone needs this information, which clearly, not clearly, but For me, clearly, has something to do with spying or government or something. You know what I mean? It has something to do with classified information maybe or something like that. It's not like they're trying to find out why he resigned and we're going to find out it's because, you know, he was in love with someone. Like, I feel like there's more juice to the story, so to speak.
And it just spoke to me again what the whole series as a whole speaks to me is McGoohan's commentary on modern day or at the time. Governments and him trying to shed light on a lot of these issues that were maybe not openly talked about, especially given British culture kind of having a lot of their media controlled by the government. So I thought it was a really smart move to kind of highlight that, to say, like, you know, there are experiments that are happening on prisoners and in on mental institution patients and so forth. And I thought that was a really interesting call to arms.
Yeah, and, you know, it works on that level. It also works to, you know, one of Patrick's goals has always been, you know, technology goes too far. And so if you look at animal testing, just even in general, right, you know, we've kind of, there's the whole campaigns, you know, no more animal testing and everything else. Like, how far we've taken animal testing. Like, do we need animal testing on this shade of lipstick? Is that absolutely necessary? So you have that side of it. And then also just in general, the idea of you kind of hinted to it, Meredith, mental instability. You know, and we just kind of poke at these people if they're not normal in society, and especially at this time. And take them to extreme to, you know, I mean, how many examples of trying to fix them? We talked about last time in terms of him trying to cure him.
Which is kind of, in present day, it's kind of almost flopped in a way, because the complaint now, I would say, is that most people say that there's not enough focus on the mentally ill, or you know what I mean? So that kind of is a weird play, because, you know, you don't want to, like, what do? It's like, you don't want to try these things. And yes, some of them are for the wrong reasons, but maybe some of these experimental things are for the right reasons and could cure something. But because you're scared to try these things, or people are going to say, why are you trying these things? I feel like, you know, how we live now in 2015 is that if, you know, 9 times out of 10, if you ask somebody, they're going to say, like, they're not doing enough.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, we talk a lot about how we don't treat mental illness as a serious disease anymore. And I think I do wonder if that's a blowback from especially in like the 30s to couple decades ago, where we kind of brushed everyone under the rug, put them in homes, did lobotomies, and just kind of treated them as invalids.
Right. And I wonder, like, and I'm not saying I'm pro this, I'm not a scientist, I don't know, but I wonder if, you know, back in the day, people would have been more okay with some of these experimental things. Like, maybe there would have been more breakthroughs. Who knows?
Yeah. But I think, you know, to argue a different side of it, whether it's a lot of these experiments still, one can argue, feel like they're just treating the symptom rather than the actual cause, right? And so the actual cause could be like, okay, we just have way too much free time on our hands and people just go insane to begin with. And
But I feel like that's a generalization with everything. Like, most doctors nowadays figure out how you can live with your symptoms better rather than figuring out what makes your symptoms so that you don't have them.
Yeah. It's interesting, though, because it seems, you know, what number two in the government or whoever, the organization, they're trying to treat the symptom of why he left, but, you know, but not the actual cause, because from what the clues right. they've given us in this episode is that it looks like he did leave as a difference of an opinion, but we're going to treat him as the symptom and not the actual cause as to why he defected to be, well, not defected, but resigned to begin
right.
with.
Exactly. Well, that's a great point. Absolutely.
Yeah. Bringing it back to the topic at hand.
That's what
yes.
you do best.
Circle back, girl. Circle back.
You do that best. And, you know, right off the bat, especially how many times is it when you rush these sort of experiments, they just, so much room for error. And we get yeah. right off the bat on the operating table, number 14, you know, being seen by our prisoner. And there's that great photo of, you know, of the of his perspective to her, right?
Yeah.
You know, and it's just so creepy because you got the needle, you got everything. Mm-hmm. And yeah. she's like, oh, crap.
Yeah. And she doesn't know at the time if he's lucid enough to remember her or if he, you know, will conjure it up as a dream sequence.
But the first thing she does is she yeah. checks to see if number two saw
exactly.
this exchange.
Yeah, she did.
And, you know, he didn't, so at least she was off the hook in that regard.
Yeah.
Or at least she
wait, what is it? Okay,
was.
In this note, I'm so curious about, Sheila says McGoohan teased her about her fringe on set. Are we discussing her bangs? Are we discussing her bangs? Because I
That's
think we're discussing her bangs.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
She's very severe with those bangs.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of bangs.
Well,
like
it's supposed.
That.
I mean, it's very look at her whole hairstyle. It's a very corporate
it's
look.
It's very strong. Yeah, it's a very strong look.
Well, and it's funny. She looked very Eastern Bloc to me.
Yeah.
It really brought around that I'm like, is she Russian? Is she East German? Like, there was just something about her overall look that I'm like, this isn't very British. Yeah. To me,
yeah.
And she had, unlike number two, she had that sense of humaneness towards her, right? Because
yeah.
especially if we're talking about, let's say, Germany, right?
Mm-hmm.
You had all those, the evil scientists kind of cliche.
Yeah.
And they'd experiment on humans and going dating back to the Holocaust and every atrocity that happened then. And yet here she's like, no, like it could harm him.
Yeah.
You know, a fourth dose, no, there's not a chance. Three is bad enough.
Right.
But I also wonder if that was just a product of the time, how women are painted in media. You know, they're always the sympathetic ones. You rarely, especially prior to the 90s, did you see women as true villains like that. I mean, I'm sure there was some media in which it was, but,
right.
you know, or maybe I've just been watching way too much Agent Carter where they, like, beat us over the head with misogyny.
I love Agent Carter. Are you all caught up?
Yeah. Yeah.
Check out that after show here on AfterBuzz TV as
it's
well.
Super fun. It's over. It's done.
It's done.
Well, it's there for the
It
viewing.
Is there.
Any other thoughts, Stephsy, before we go and party?
Yeah.
The only other thought that I had was, I mean, I guess we talk about one party beforehand, but I don't know that I can hold it in anymore. I just can't believe that when he first spied on her, and again, I'm with you, Meredith. I was very excited that we saw him be able to spot. Like, even when he got away for mm-hmm. a minute last time, it wasn't very spy-like. It was like, I'm going to buy this rug and put it on a boat and go. Like, this was very like, I'm going to climb through this and I'm going to, like, go watch her. And when we see her, it's when he goes and follows us, she's got that Snow White cape on again. Poisonous. But I was very shocked that they see him doing everything. Why did they not see him doing that in the beginning?
Because number two was asleep.
Sleep but on the number
job.
Two is not the only one watching. There's all those guys in the other room that watch.
You know, you bring up an interesting point, though. If maybe number two is the only one watching, you know?
But in previous episodes that we've watched, like when they're on the boat, it's like there's people in the other room watching the radar. Like there's people that have alerted number two previously, like to what.
Maybe
what
they
doing.
Haven't figured out 24 hour. I don't know. It is. I also thought it was a little weird.
It was
that
a little
I was
weird.
Like, why wasn't anyone backing up on this?
Yeah.
Part of it. There's also an intent factor that goes into mm-hmm. it, right? Where all of a sudden an alarm goes off if there's an attempt to escape. So
yeah.
this is one of the first episodes. You know, we've only done two, but where his goal is not to escape. His goal is just to beat number two. Or.
Yeah.
To prevent whatever it is that they want.
And it could be that by this
to
point.
Find out what's happening to himself.
Yeah, yeah, he could have figured out how to circumvent some of the security measures, you know? I wish we had seen a little bit more of that just as a fan side of things. I wish we could have seen him, like, dodging the statue or, like, you know. But I to me, I'm just assuming, well, he's finally getting the gist of where he's at, and he's finally accepting, okay, I'm here, now I'm going to put my skills to use, as opposed to just blindly fighting my way back. I'm going to use what I know to circumvent what's happening.
And, you know, there was that line, too, and we'll backtrack in a moment, but there was that line from number two of, like, he's always walking. Doesn't he get tired?
Yeah.
And it, so, you know, when that's the idea of what you have of the prisoner, then it's, okay, why do I need to watch him for 24 hours, 7 days a week, when all he's going to do is just walk around? So I'm tired myself from just watching him turn off for a couple minutes, and then boom.
But in this sequence, if the last episode, whatever, he tried to escape, wouldn't you think that surveillance would be even more so on him?
That's why I don't think it was meant to be the third episode, or enough time has passed. Like, we really don't know in between time.
It was just weird to me, because it's like everything they seem to do, you know, the number two and the village people, the YMCA village people, they seem to know, and they didn't know this one thing.
No, I agree. It struck me as odd, but sometimes, like, I have to force myself. I feel so much of the show is purposely driven, and everything's done for a reason.
Yeah, you have to believe why.
And then I have to remind myself, no, I need to suspend disbelief sometimes.
Right.
But too, you know, we're also assuming that, you know, right now we're taking on a per episode basis, and when we, you know, let's say after five of these, we can start to, you know, paint in broader strokes. And so you have to look at it like, okay, at the end of the day, the village could be setting him up for these tiny victories, so that way they can crush him in a bigger way. This could be breaking his spirit, and so you give him these small victories. Because, again, he's gotten small victories along the way in each episode, so it's just thematically now in a bigger way.
See, but I don't know that I agree with that, because if that's what they were trying to do, why would number two be getting in so much trouble?
Because number two is expendable.
But it's because you know, right? What's that Christopher Nolan movie with the magicians?
Not the
Illusionist.
No, the
Prestige.
Yeah.
Yes.
The Prestige, right?
Such a good movie.
And this hopefully isn't a spoiler, but, you know, a true magician, the art of his magic is not what he does on stage, but what he does off stage. Mm-hmm. And so by switching out number twos and things like that, like, you are playing it perfect. There's no room for error. So when number six wakes up, you know, there's the footprints from the night, because it had rained. And so you could call that a mistake. But if it's deliberately, purposefully put in there, this sounds like The Matrix, then who is to argue that that was what was supposed to happen?
Yeah.
Because they planned it like that for him to find it deliberately, purposely.
I understand what you're saying, and I'm not saying you're told it's not right. I'm just saying I feel like, well, again, I don't know because of the order we're watching. I feel like there would be clues to that with number two.
Okay.
And who's calling number two?
You can assume number one. You can assume whatever you want.
Okay, I'm going to put this out there to the listeners.
To the world.
I want you guys to let us know what you think. Was it a production error in the fact that he didn't get caught going into the lab? Or do you think it was part of a bigger, wider conspiracy to set him up for a minor victory for a big crushing moment later down the road? I want to know what you guys think.
And if you do talk about it in terms of the general Prisoner series rather than just an episode, you know, assuming you've seen every single episode, just put a little spoiler warning at the top.
Yeah, do put a little spoiler.
Meredith and I will read it.
Yeah, we won't let Steph read it.
I won't read it.
Until after.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right, so we're in Paris for this extravagant party. Load it up. Load up the dream sequence.
Oh, God. It was so good.
Yeah, and here we are. We meet a madame.
A madame.
A madame.
I love this.
I love her. I love her so much. She's everything I love about 1960s mod French.
Yes.
She
totally
is. Yeah.
See, I have to say, though, she seems suspicious to me from the beginning.
Really?
Yeah. Because the way she came out, and she just knew him, and he didn't, like, there was a way that she greeted him and he didn't reciprocate it. To me, that felt like he's making pretend, but he doesn't know, but he should know, but maybe.
So wait, you're assuming that she is really Madame? Or, because to me, he set up Madame to be C, knowing that no one knew what C looked like.
Exactly.
No, I'm saying that she was, from the beginning, she was part of it. Like, not part of the village, but him and her had something else going on.
What? How would he have known in the beginning?
I don't know. It just felt that way.
He time traveled, told himself?
No. But, like, she just seemed... It wasn't like she was just some... it just seemed weird. It seemed like there was a different connection there. As soon as she came out, it wasn't like how he would... Like, it wasn't like, hey, how are you? And he knew where he was.
Like,
in a dream, if you go to a party, for the most part, I would think you would know where you're going. And he didn't know that.
But that's assuming that you're assuming that it's your dream that you've inserted yourself into rather than being inserted to.
I took it as
then that means that she's working for them, and if she distracted him to take the sea, then that wouldn't make sense.
No, I think what they did was the whole experiment was they... I actually think this was a real party that had happened in his past. And that they had gathered enough information to build this world based on a real life event and with real life people that may or may not have necessarily happened in this order, but these were all real people from his life. And to put central figures, they had to be some connection to him. And I think with Madame is that she came across to me as an old, I don't want to necessarily say mark, but definitely someone who was involved in the spy agency, possibly, you know, someone, a double agent that they had in France, and that they obviously, I'm in my head, I'm like, they had a torrid love affair, and she was very much still in love with him, and he was like, yeah, okay, yeah, we hooked up once, it's cool, man, but I'm gonna let you think this, because you run this beautiful palace, castle thing that I want in on. So I think, to me, it was very, like, she's very Mallory Archer to me.
Yes.
But then does he not remember that he had a love affair
with
her?
No, I think he did. I think he was just playing it cool, to be honest.
Oh,
I think
I read it
as like, I'm a cool spy dude. I'm just going to be aloof.
I read it as uncomfortable.
I read it as aloof.
Yeah.
Yeah, I read it the same as Meredith.
That's okay.
There you go. Shortly, you know, Madame is kind of our through line. Obviously, it's her party.
Right.
And any references in the original script to the prisoner drinking, he does not drink.
Yeah.
He was very specific of that as an actor to not do that. And then shortly thereafter, hey, insert into the sequence A. And we get a picture of A. And I want to hear your guys' take on this because I don't know if I necessarily agree with this, but there's a whole faction of people who think... Based on the dialogue of like, hey, and I wish I had more specific examples. I didn't write them down. But because I found out this theory afterwards of A and 6 being gay lovers. I don't agree with it. Not because of that. But
yeah, I just never got that.
No.
I tend to. Yeah.
I didn't even.
Nope. I just felt that there was tension from them, but not from being lovers. But I would say that they were probably rival spies, that they worked for the same agency. And one of them, A, obviously decided to turn coat, and 6 chose not to. And I think there's a little bit of a power play here where A wants to get him over on his side because I think, I don't know, I felt insecurity and jealousy coming from A that he needed to get 6 for some reason, but never that there was a torrid love affair between them.
See, to add to Meredith, I agree exactly with what you're saying, but I also felt that A got there by doing it dirty.
Yeah.
And he was reiterating, like, we think different, like, we act different, like, I'm not gonna do that the way you did that in order to get whatever you think, like, it's not worth it to me. And maybe that's why, you know, A stayed in the game and has XYZ and number 6 resigned. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like his resignation in this, you know, communication is more like a F you, like, I'm not going to lower to your level.
Yeah. And I agree with that.
I can't. But yeah, I would have never in my, I would have never thought that.
Well, you know, there's the, at the time, a lot of things were kind of coming out in terms of, right, Imitation Game. You know, that didn't come out for a while, but that was about, you know, a man who was gay and closeted.
Yeah,
when did
the Alan Turing stuff actually get discovered?
After World War II.
Yeah. I mean, I know he was like slowly ousted out.
I think, I'm going to get butchered for this, but I believe somewhere in 1954.
Yeah. It was within the 10-year frame. Yeah. I feel like the 60s, again, I wasn't alive then. I just don't think homosexuality was one of the topics that they dealt with in media a lot in the 60s. I think everyone was too busy, like, kind of doing drugs and partying in the background to really worry about
a lot of things.
They
didn't. But, if, you know, going back to Alan Turing, like, he killed himself because of
I mean, he was
homosexuality and, yeah. and feeling so closeted and not, you know, he didn't. I mean, at the end of the day, like, I feel like if he was a straight man,
yeah.
this whole, I mean, you know, and it's crazy that, you know, this year or the end of last year is when this movie Imitation Game comes out. If he wasn't a homosexual man, would that story be more like, so many people don't know that that's what stemmed inventions is the computer. And like, mm-hmm. he's so responsible for so many things and people, it's not common knowledge. It's not taught in textbooks, you know, for kids because of the fact that he's homosexual. And so I feel like, though maybe it wasn't forefront in the media, I definitely think it was something that was happening.
But I don't feel it played into this scene at all. I just think
I don't agree with what you said. Like,
I think this is a matter of, it is what it is. And I think had there been a different, you guys spoke of it, there been a different interaction, their morals were different.
Mm-hmm.
And if they had of the same cloth, so to speak, then yes, perhaps we could be making this debate. But I just, you know, number A was just a bad dude.
I don't know how they even came up with that. Correlation.
I don't know. I mean, you know, it's, I don't know. I don't see it, but.
Here's a picture of B seeing you, you know, for as nonviolent as the show claims to be, it's kind of violent.
It's really kind of like psychosomatically violent.
But like the fight scenes were so rad. They were so old
really?
School
They were so
fight.
Good. I thought they were great.
They were so
them.
Rad. I loved it.
Oh, I thought you said bad. I'm like,
rad.
R-A-D. Yes, yeah, rad. They were super rad.
They were so awesome. They were just like so old school fighting.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't about the blood and the gore. It was like just a straight up like
And it wasn't about like mind games. It was, I'm just going to take these guys out.
There's no weapons. Yeah. It was just like, we're going to like go outside and fight like men.
That's it. Absolutely. And no quick camera cuts. I hate that stuff.
Yeah. And he was so good about it. Again, like with the whole, like, I'm going to straighten my bow tie and be seeing you and just peace out. Like, I'm like, yes, that is a spy. That is Danger Man right there.
Yes,
they
it
were
is.
Awesome.
All right. Okay. So afterwards, we wake up the next day and we're meeting for the first time, number 14, or he sees number 14. And so he kind of does a thing where he follows her. And then they sit down for a bit of coffee, and I love, by the way, only interaction of dialogue that they actually have in this entire episode. How many times do they interact, but
this is the only time verbally. The dialogue actually is exchanged.
And so what did you guys think of this scene? Because to me it was great of like, this is awkward, but how does one, you know?
I thought it was a good simple scene. I didn't take too much away from it. It was just kind of, I think it was just for me, it's number 6 sussing out the situation. I think he had obviously seen her in his dream, quote unquote, and I think he wanted to just kind of explore and figure out like, hey, what's going on? This is where he starts to realize that there's something up.
I felt it was a little bit snarky, too, in a way, when he was like, this isn't in the social etiquette handbook of how to do this. So I was kind of like, he was, like, there was a bit of sarcasm that I liked. There was, like, a confidence in him, like, I'm going to find out what you're doing. I already kind of know what you're doing, and I'm going to figure it out. But, I really liked it. Mm-hmm. I was really, it made me laugh out loud, this one.
Yeah.
I loved it a lot, too, and, you know, that whole interaction, and then right off the bat, he goes and sees number 2, who's, you know, tired as can be. Mm-hmm. Which, ironically, you know, she, right, talk about the workhorse, she's up the next day. She's, we could say, chippy overall. And him,
she gets it done.
And him, he's just waking up. He needs his glass of milk. Milk is good for the temper.
That man.
And I love this interaction. The lines go, he shows him his mark because he obviously discovered it. Anyone who had nothing to hide would ask where I got it right away. Where did you get it, number 6? In my sleep. Oh, you must be restless. Perhaps you need a checkup. I have a favorite doctor. Really? Number 14.
Boom. Yeah. I'm that on was, to you.
Yeah. That was just like a big...
F you. It was a huge... Yeah. It's exactly what it was.
And I loved it.
I know. I love when number 6 is in his game. Like, I love when he's like, I know what I'm doing. I'm confident. Like you said, cocky. Like, he's just, he thumbs his nose at the system.
Yeah, and he's saying, like, as much as you guys want to control me, I'm still one step, maybe not one step ahead, that's a bad association, but I'm still figuring it out. Like, I'm still not going to play your game. Like, I'm here, and I'm like, okay, not okay with being here, but I get that I might be here for a little bit, but I'm still not going to play your game.
Absolutely.
You know, he's just showing he's smarter than them, which is awesome.
And speaking to your point, you know, so he's going beyond what is in the instructional manual.
Yeah.
Right.
You know? That was great. All right. Second night. Here we go.
Yeah.
Speaking of Madame getting jealous.
Oh, my gosh.
That was a great little exchange.
She was not happy with that. I'm telling you, she loves him, man. She thinks that they're going to run off together.
But I liked how friends don't need names.
Yeah.
That was great. And so, I like the setup, you know. Mm-hmm. So here's a, you know, we're going to look at a picture of them kind of in the arbor, right? Mm-hmm. But it's also a maze. I like that a lot. It was fun.
Yeah. No, I think, so this is B, obviously. This is the second, person inserted from his past that they hope to get him to relinquish information as to why he quit. And we start to see him fixated on the mirror, like we see,
yes,
which gets brought in later, but you know, he does fix that mirror and then he goes out. And she was interesting because at first I was kind of like, what is their history, where do they come from? But he, like any lucid dreamer, starts to catch on really quick that there's something not quite right here.
Well, he knows it's because he says, isn't this a dreamy party?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which they turn to. And in terms of that, he started to he knew more about it, that they had control of her, because they messed it up by inserting themselves in. Had they let it take its course, perhaps they would have gotten some answers.
Well, and that's every villain's downfall, is that they can't wait it out. They're so impatient.
Yes.
You know?
Right.
Steph, so you had something to say.
Yeah.
No, I mean, we learn very quickly that, you know, she's a spy. But I think what I really liked about her interaction was exactly what you guys were saying, was when they said, when right away he's like, this isn't you, it shows that they actually have had some type of relationship. It's not just some random person that he might sell out to give this information. Like, they have had a history, because, you know what I mean? Like, right away with A, I feel like you can tell that they were on opposite sides of the fence. You're not quite sure where they stand, but, you know, right away he's like, this isn't you. So I really liked that. It made me believe that they might have had a better history than A. But still, that he wasn't selling out.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, so many great questions. Because it's not going to the point, right? He figures it out because he asked her very direct and specific questions. And here's the village who's supposed to know everything about everybody. And it's like, it's not in the book. It's not in the book. What do I do? And I give number 14 credit, because she's like, you know, she at least has a solution, whereas number 2, again, in all of this, he's like, I don't know what to do. She at least says, like, help me, there isn't time.
Yeah. It just shows kind of the futility of number 2, that he's, you know, he's under so much pressure to perform and get results, and he's willing to kind of go at any lengths, and that's when you start to screw up.
Absolutely. But I like this interaction. I like the, you know, knowing who number C becomes. Mm-hmm. I like this little exchange of aggressiveness, because it just further plays into the number 6's of it.
He starts talking to B as if it's not B. He knows who he's addressing. And I love that.
Yes.
Like, it's so apparent that he's like, no, I know exactly who I'm talking to. And we also get another good fight scene.
Yeah.
Love a good. By the way, they were recycled. He had a line, something about saving money, and I think it was meta of the production, because the same henchman from the first fight
came back. Well, there was also, I kind of thought that was, I know they probably did it for budgetary reasons, but I almost thought it was like, to reinforce it's just a dream sequence, that you can only have X amount of players in a dream. Like, there was even in one of the crowd scenes, I thought I saw one of the old number 2s walk by.
That would be funny.
I know, because it looked, the second one, the bearded guy, the heavier set bearded guy, it looked like he was in there. And I was like, wait, is that, it was too quick and I couldn't rewind. So it would have made sense to bring in other players from the village for the dream sequence.
Yeah. About the budget thing too, I had thought, this is totally backtracking, but when he was going through the woods to follow her, it almost looked like they used the same scene twice. They like came around the bushes.
Oh, they did.
Oh, they definitely, yeah, yeah, it was. Yeah, it was, yeah, very was apparent.
Yeah, they did, yeah.
Speaking of that, you know, that was a reshoot.
Okay.
Right? And they used doubles for the two.
Yeah. It wasn't even McGowan and, yeah.
There
yeah.
you go. And they, you know, even this episode, they have a habit of doing day for night.
Mm-hmm.
This day for night was much better than Chimes of.
It was.
Yeah.
Well, especially when we get to see, there was a really interesting day for night scene set up. But we'll talk about that in like 2 minutes.
Absolutely. All right. So let's, we kind of talked about the stalking moments, but do you want to talk more to it, Steph, apart from kind of being a little irked that no one was watching him?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that's just it. Like, I was just, you know, a little bit. It wasn't that I was irked. I was just a little bit like, okay, so can he just go hide out in the tunnel? Can he just go over there? Like, is this off perimeter? Like, why is he not being followed?
He's off the grid, baby.
Yeah. But, yeah, so did he. But then it actually shows them that he did that in his later, you know what I mean, when he's dreaming again, they show what he did and how he...
Well, he shows it. I think at that point he has control over the dream sequence, so he's showing them how he figured it out,
but that kind of threw me too, because why would he say, hey, there's a flaw in your system? Unless it was just for, I'm smarter than you. But, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like that would work to his benefit to try and find more flaws in the system in case they try and do something like this again.
I have a theory about that.
All right, I'd love to hear it.
So. Because I don't want to jump over the sequence that happens before that.
Yeah.
So,
are you talking about
So third night.
Yeah.
He goes back home. He pours the tea down the sink.
Yes.
Drinks the water, which I actually, did he play that out? Did he drink that water and pass out, or did they also put a sleeping drug?
Spike the water.
Yeah, spike the water. So then he ends up in the lab. Gets injected, ends up in the dream sequence. And I feel like he had been spiked because of how wibbly wobbly the dream sequence was, because he was obviously fighting for control. And I think that's what the tilt shift perspective, and then him ultimately fixing the mirror was the sign of, I took control of this situation.
I definitely think the water was spiked, because I was liking the moment that he was having. Like, I feel like it was kind of like a screw you almost when he knew they were watching and he was pouring the coffee out or tea, whatever it was. So him drinking the water, from the way he was looking, I thought he beat them, but he did not. Which is super creepy.
Yeah.
To me.
Spike in the water?
Everything.
Well, it goes back to ideas of communist Russia and kind of doing that. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of theories there. To me, I don't think the water was spiked, unfortunately. I think he was clever, you know, because I think, you know, he was able to fall asleep on his own. And him fighting it, the oscillating... images were just him just really fighting and taking full control, because it does take a lot, you know.
Yeah,
it's
and
all
there was
mental
a little bit
point.
Of the drug in it, in the injection, so.
Wait, so you don't think the water was spiked at all, and he fake passing out on the ground so that they can inject him again?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't, yeah.
Our producer is making, finger gestures at us. I'm sorry, guys.
He's shown me number one's outside the door.
But again, they would see that, because they've seen, they have eyes on that inside. So
yeah,
they would see he didn't drink the water. I don't buy that one. I love you.
Yeah, I feel like they also spiked the water. I would have. As a failsafe, I would totally.
Yeah.
I mean, as a failsafe, you shoot him with a tranquilizer gun if necessary.
As a failsafe, you do a lot more than what they're doing.
Right,
but
right.
Then we wouldn't have a compelling television show.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we, so he, in the sequence, the mirror's righted, right? Symbolizing he takes control. And Madame is C.
But
and
she's
Well, we don't know, because up until this point, we didn't know from the files that there was no C.
Mm-hmm.
Her image is unknown, but we find that out from number 14 and number 2.
Yeah, how can we insert someone we don't know?
Wait, but so then how... No, I'm not going to. I think I'm off.
Okay.
Did he set up the C?
Yeah, he set up C.
No. I mean, like.
Did he take files away? No.
No, did he outsmart them in the beginning? Like, why was there a C folder?
No.
What was going to be in? If he wouldn't have figured out how to dilute, which we skipped over, he diluted his third intake of this drug. Mm-hmm. If he wouldn't have figured out how to do that, and he wouldn't have been able to take control and have Madame, you know, I don't want to spoil it because we're not there yet, about the
C. But you can spoil it.
Well, have Madame pretty much show that number two was C, then why would that C folder be there?
I think, well, because, okay, so they
didn't
know.
What would have happened if he didn't do that?
They didn't know who C was. They were just assuming that C would reveal themselves at some point. Once he went in there, after the second night, before the third night, and he looked through the files, had an idea of where they were going, he made the conscious decision to make them think Madame was number C.
Yeah, he erased C. Whoever C would have been, he erased them.
In his dream sequence, and he replaced C in the third night as Madame. I don't think Madame intended to be C from the get-go. I think he made a conscious choice once he was in the third night to make her C.
And not reveal the true C.
Exactly.
So that's, you know, pretty much.
Whether or not he knows the true C based off of the description, he could have just erased C entirely.
I just feel like it was weird that they didn't have a picture or anything, and then that was one that he was able to turn around.
But he doesn't have a picture of number one, but he exists, you know, in theory he exists, or she.
I think the village, or the people in charge of the village, aren't as smart as they want people to think they are.
Yeah,
they
maybe
don't
that's
know everything.
Yeah, maybe no. I assume that.
And
they
if they knew everything,
known.
They wouldn't have to torture
and
him.
And they would have,
you know,
like,
to get
when
this
they
info.
Were talking to B, they would have known about the sun and
exactly.
Like that.
Yeah, see? So there's the flaws.
There's a gap in the knowledge.
There is.
There's a loophole.
And remember, Madame and number six had a great conversation, and she says, men always evade questions. All my husbands did. And I loved how that tied into now, because you could say that he's evading her question of why did you resign?
Exactly. Yeah.
So I found that kind
That'd
of fun.
That'd be a really good reason when we find out.
If we find out.
I think we have the reason.
No,
to me,
I mean, like, he gave us the reason this episode. Well, let's just, because I know we're on a timetable here. Let's just get into it. So he goes on and he says, okay, fine. No, I will defect. I will give you what you want in to excite number two and make him think, oh, finally, we're going to get what we want. And then they go, Madame takes him to an offsite location in which 14 and 2 realize, like, wait, there's a fourth player here. There's a D. There's an unknown entity.
Right.
And they, you know, get excited to think, like, oh my God, there's more here. There's more to it. And we see number 6 go into, from daytime, go into a nighttime situation in which he meets a masked figure and taunts them. And I got, do you want me to just rap? Do you want me to?
Okay, you got to roll
I'm
here.
I'm all over this. And so he taunts. At this point, he starts to make it very clear that he knows what's going on. And he taunts them outside to challenge him. And they're like, no, push him further. We got to see this. We got to reveal this. And he pulls off the mask and spins him around. And C or D or whoever this fourth person is number 2.
Yeah.
And is revealed as number 2. And he's like, and he gives him, he tried to give him some papers earlier. And when he forces them to look at the papers, they're just travel brochures.
Yeah. Well, it's even better than that, because he, you know, a couple of things. Mm-hmm. What I loved was we break down the fourth wall.
Yes.
Like, of course I knew who you are, but let the audience, meaning us and number 2 and
14.
And 14, you know, here's kind of a picture of we've got of them. This isn't exactly from that moment in time, but I just love it anyway. Of them kind of watching.
Right.
And so he doesn't give the papers right away. There the first shock is that, wow, number D is number 2. And then he goes off, and what's funny is that whole turn to the doors that don't open, but he comes in, he's like, I forgot to give you this. Yes. I am a man of my word. Yeah. Here's some papers.
And then we see him walking through the forest to the lab in the dream sequence, and they turn around like, oh my God, is he going to walk in? They, for a moment, they're like, they forgot his physical body is there in front of him, and they're like, what the heck is going on?
Yeah.
I loved it.
I did. I loved it, too. But so you think that the reason, like, you think that that's a blatant reasoning for his resignation?
I think he was done. I think
difference of opinion.
Yeah.
Right, but we don't get the specifics on it. Yep. You know. I want the specifics. I want information.
If I wrote a resignation email, it would say difference of opinion.
It's the diplomatic way of saying, I don't believe.
That was kind of like known since the beginning.
Yeah, and that's
like
that's
dealing with government. There's,
but here's the thing: it's like a matter of, to me, it's almost like you have the reason, but it's just not satisfying. Yeah. So you're like a little kid that just needs, okay, but why? Like, what do you mean?
Well,
but
I'm telling
why?
You why. Like they just you they're not taking it at face value. They refuse to believe what's presented in front of them, and they'll go to extreme lengths to prove some unfounded fear.
Yeah.
And it's not even a theory. It's a fear they have.
Which is why, you know.
Fear of the unknown.
So, right, there's a great picture. As soon as he is done, the images of the dream sequence change back to his resignation. And they loop over and over. And it's like to say, like, this is the reason, perhaps.
Right.
You just keep wanting more, but it's not there. And I love that. So
I feel like there's a little bit more.
Okay.
We'll see.
Well, fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. And we end on the German Expressionist phone, which signifies the end of our friend number two.
Dun, dun, dun.
I love that phone. I kind of want one.
I want a working one.
Yeah. Like, I want a real gigantic red phone.
All right, so we've discussed the episode. Now, this kind of ties directly to number two, right? Next week, we will be doing Free for All, which is all about democratic elections, and we've hinted at it with the last episode. And this episode, the reason I brought it in was there's a picture. You have to really catch it, right? But the Tally Ho, the newspaper, for the first time, dates itself. So February 10th is the date, and the article reads, is number two fit for further terms? Which I found interesting in this particular episode. And again, you have to kind of really catch it.
Yeah.
But it's there.
That's I actually did not see that. That's a really good one.
There you go.
Wow.
It's interesting
we have a date, but not a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because who, you know, and I like that both from the perspective for the show, but also it can sustain its longevity. So that way, even if they had like a date and it didn't matter to the story, you know, I wouldn't want to say 1966 because it feels dated.
It does. It's true. Yeah. They were very forethought in that.
What are some things, overall generalizations and ideas you guys want to talk about?
Well, perhaps we
haven't hit as much as you guys wanted to.
Well, one of the things I actually wanted to talk about was, some of the concept of non-state, hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two schools of thought when it comes to hypnosis. There's putting someone within a trance state, and then there's the non-state theory, which is a form of imaginative role reenactment. And that's generally brought about with chemically induced hypnosis, where you feed someone a drug that will put them into a sleep state and then create a situation for them in which they feel that they are in charge. And I thought that was, you know, it was big into a lot of the mind experiments from the 40s into the late 60s. And you saw that with LSD specifically. And I thought that was a really interesting tie-in for them. I don't know. I just found that whole concept fascinating because I think the idea of hypnosis is extremely fascinating, and that they were kind of going for me with the more non-state, you know, non-traditional theory, because most people look at hypnosis as, you know, someone talking you through very methodically and pacing, but
focus,
it's like, no, we're just going to, focus. But that they chose to go this route. And again, to me, it just ties into, I think, a lot of McGowan and by proxy, what I feel number six feels is issues he took with the government and why he resigned, because he probably wasn't agreeing with a lot of the practices at the time.
I think maybe that is it. Like, I feel like maybe because they were doing so many things that were quote unquote wrong.
Unethical, yeah.
Yeah, that's why they're looking for a specific reason. Like, what specifically pushed you to resign? Because there's so much that's happening. Mm-hmm. So which one thing? Because maybe he was someone that was trusted and did very good work for them, and they want to know what kind of.
But here's the thing, right? I look at it in the sense also, whatever reason he could give them, at the same time, I still feel like they're not going to accept it, because in many ways it puts blame on them.
Yeah, and they don't want to hear that.
Yeah, they're not willing to look at themselves in the mirror.
So then what do you think their end goal is? Because if they don't really want to hear it, why are they at? Like, what do you think
they think they want to hear it.
Yeah.
They just don't know that they don't want to hear it.
It's like a child. The government is in this, the village, yeah. The people who run the village are children. Not physically
got
children,
yeah. But they have no responsibility.
Even number two is like a toy. Like if you're, if you get bored of one toy, you replace it with another.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I just think that, I mean, and I'm sure you guys have watched the whole series first, but I just think that that's what they're looking for. I feel like he has maybe knowledge that not everybody else does.
Well, and we know that because he knows things and they want to make sure he hasn't defected and told us.
Right.
I mean, most of the time, governments, you know, let's just bring up Snowden and the NSA, for example.
Yeah.
They don't give a rat's butt what Snowden knows about Russia or Syria or Egypt or whatever. They're more concerned about what he's releasing about what our government does. And that's
right.
That, you know, in any government situation when they have a rogue, you know, information specialist, they don't care about other countries' knowledge getting out. They want to know, like, we have to protect our own interests and we have to make sure people don't know about what we're hiding from people. Yeah. So I think that's really what it is they just want to make sure they're afraid he defected. They fear he defected because why would anyone just resign from the best job if you're a patriot?
But if they don't want to know something from him, why wouldn't they just kill him?
Because I think they want to make sure he hasn't spread that information.
Yeah. You can't. Yeah. You can't have that doubt.
Yeah. Why haven't we put a sniper on Snowden? Because we need him to find. We need to find out what he's told Russia or whomever.
Right.
It's a calculations game, like imitation game.
Well, every day start over.
Absolutely. And, you know, I did like the
idea.
I like the idea of Freud, right? Because, you know, you can tap so much potential with the unconscious mind and you can get to the bottom of various things. And so, you know, they thought through his unconscious they would get there. But if you can, you know, I don't know. I haven't really studied Freud to the level that, you know, certainly in this case I should have. But when you can take control of your consciousness or a subconsciousness or at least be aware of it, then as the prisoner did, you can kind of overcome a lot.
Yeah.
The power of the brain.
Power of the mind.
Well, just kind of too, it just goes to show, like, I don't know, maybe this is a little far-fetched, but it's like we are so, like, in our own quote-unquote village because we have so much more power over our brain and what we can do and how we can maybe heal our bodies and all this stuff. But you know what I mean? Like, the things that government or medicine or whatever put on us keeps us in this. Like, our village is a lot better than their village, but it's very much, you know.
Yeah.
Very much parallels
life. We're all prisoners.
Well, speaking of that, I before we wrap up, I want to. This kind of ties into the prisoner and our own sort of lives in general. Someone made a comment that they would love us to go even longer than we do.
Yes,
I would love that,
and I would love that too. And someone said, you know, can't the powers at AfterBuzz make that happen? And someone noted, I believe Phil is one of the powers, if not the power of AfterBuzz TV.
You got called the poop out.
I did. But here's what I have to say about them, because it ties into the prisoner. There is no one more of a prisoner than I. I am a prisoner to 200 people's schedules. I am a prisoner to TV. No, this isn't a moment.
Continue.
It's a comparison of, it's a comparison of the idea that no matter what, there's a great, well, you can debate it's whether it's great or not, but there's a great line in The Master that says, show me a world in which you are not someone's master and I will, you know, succumb.
Yeah.
No matter what you do in life, you are someone's, someone is your master.
Yeah. And you are someone's master. And,
exactly.
And currently, because you have an obligation. 5 minutes
the
ago,
we're the prisoners.
Yeah, we have to end this episode even earlier than normal, which makes me sad.
But I think overall we covered most of it. You know, what's nice is each of these episodes we're kind of building one upon the other, and so we can reference other stuff, and we can get to things a little bit quicker.
Yeah.
Again, the first episode we need to lay down groundwork.
And guys, if anyone wants to talk to me about cyberpunk theories, please hit me up on Twitter because I love discussing cyberpunk. So.
That's right.
Sweet.
Yeah, that's something I wish we got to tap into more, but I love those movies. Inception, Matrix, Neuromancer.
Yeah. There's so many good references to what happened.
That's right. Let us know your favorite. You know, I'd love to know. And find some obscure ones too. Obviously, you know, these ones that are mentioned, they're the biggest of the biggest, but there's definitely great examples.
Yes.
All right, guys, on behalf of Steph C, found at I Am Steph C.
Yes, you guys can find IAMSTEFZ. Thanks for watching.
And Meredith Placco.
At MPLACKO.
And of course, here at AfterBuzz TV, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, check out Meredith on Popcorn Talk Network for the Marvel Movie News Show. And yes. Steph Z can be found on Agent Carter. Yes, it's over.
Not anymore.
But, it's, yeah. but she's still there. We didn't erase her from the video.
Shark Tank, How to Get Away with Murder.
All those things. We'll see you next time. We will be talking about Free for All, so definitely watch it if you haven't already done so, or rewatch it if you have, just to get it fresh in your brain. Rate, comment, let us know. We'll see you next time. Bye. Be seeing you.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz. See you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.